This is a conversation with Delray Phoenix, an LGBTQI activist from Nevada City, on gender issues, recorded on the 21st of January, 2020. Modern world now, there is no just male and female now. There, yes. We have different genders and mm-hmm. different shades and tones and things going on in the way people consider themselves in their own gender now.
Yes.
And you are somewhat of a, let's see, expert in that field, may I ask?
I'd like to think so. I do identify as non-binary or gender fluid, kind of like an umbrella. So non-binary is kind of under the umbrella of transgender, and it's for those of us who don't really fit on the ends of the spectrum, at the male or the female end.
Right, because non-binary is male, female.
Well, binary is it means two. One of so two, yeah. Yeah, so, you know, those of us that don't fit at either end, you know, fit somewhere in the middle. And there are several different variations of that. There's gender fluid, like me, where you kind of go back and forth and in and out. And some people identify as agender, meaning that they don't identify with gender at all. Yes. And then they're...
Oh, so the first one, like you identify whatever is at any particular time you're in.
Yeah. Well, okay, so gender is a construct, unlike biological sex. Biological sex is male, female, or intersex. And intersex is 17... There are 17 official chromosomal variations of, wow. Of how the sexual organs are presented.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And intersex people make up approximately 2% of the total population. So I think it's closer to 1.7. Same with transgender, actually. It's also close to 2% of the overall population. So, but a person who is intersex may not be transgender, or they may identify as male or female. Gender is a construct that is made up of our roles, our personality traits, and the way that we walk through our life within those roles and traits. So we think of feminine traits as being like pro-social and maybe submissive and, you know, harmonizing. And we think of male traits as being dominant and having personal agency. We even think sometimes of male traits as, you know, going to extremes of violence and things like that. But that's what we would consider like toxic masculinity. Right. So people who identify as non-binary gender fall within that spectrum of somewhere in between, basically.
Now, non-binary, it's actually, you can go to DMV and mm-hmm. you can now be non-binary officially.
Yes, here in California and in several other states, people who are non-binary can get a gender marker of X on their driver's license. Huh. And to date, there has been one federal case that of a person who identified as non-binary and was born intersex who was able to have a federal judge rule that they could have X on their passport. However, that has not happened since that I know of, given the current administration and the way, I mean, transgender people in general have been erased from the Department of Health services at the federal level. So all information that was on the websites and available at the federal level has basically been obliterated.
Oh, no.
So
that's
by the current administration. So,
oh, dear.
You know, and given that and the violence that affects our community, it can be very difficult to be out and about, so, and vocal.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're lucky then in California then. We have a bit more enlightenment going on.
We really are. We really are. And, you know, California has some wonderful resources. You know, University of California, San Francisco has a gender clinic that has been doing studies for decades on gender. And they're pretty much considered the foremost health transgender health experts. Currently interning at the Gender Health Center in Sacramento as a therapist. My own personal MSW program that I'm in, and there are several gender health centers, you know, under different names around the country in larger cities, but California does have the most resources.
We certainly hear that, certainly in the trans side of the gender thing, that there's an incredible amount of violence.
Yes.
We hear often on TV that gets unresolved. Mm-hmm. And can you tell us about that? How that's dealt with? And
okay, well,
and
so
people in the community, how they deal with it.
So worldwide, last year we had, as of I think it was November 20th was the actual date of Transgender Day of Remembrance. There were 337 murders of transgender people, and that's of people that we know were transgender. They were out and identifiable at the time of their demise. And that's around the world. So there were 30-something here in the United States. There are some statistics that count suicide among that, and we consider suicide a murder because most people who complete suicide behind gender issues do it because of the stigma that they face in their communities and their families. I know that LGBT youth comprise a very large part of the homeless youth population because they're turned away by their families when they come out. Mm-hmm. And trans youth tend to be the, a larger representative portion of that. And homelessness and poverty are also rampant within the transgender community because of the lack of acceptance in workplaces and, the difficulty in getting in, just getting into society, when most people are, graduating high school and going to college, they have the support of their families, right. And the like. If you're living on the streets, how do you, move up without a lot of support?
Yeah. And so you're the Gender Health Center then. Mm-hmm. What type of services they bring to the community?
So we provide therapy, which is what I do. We also provide hormone services. We have a hormone clinic where people can come and they get treated by interns from UC Davis Medical Center. Mm. And we all operate under, my clinical director is from Sac State, who has a doctorate in social work. UC Davis, same thing. They operate under a clinical director for the hormone clinic. We also have a needle exchange program and harm reduction services. We test for sexually transmitted infections and, promote sexual health outreach. We also go out into the community and do Gender 101 trainings with agencies and doctors and churches and anybody who wants to know more about transgender issues.
Well, that's it. The sensitivity can be extreme, can't it, in those situations and even down to just what you call somebody.
Yes.
Is vital. So can you go over, I know, everyone tries to get it right, and I always make mistakes, but,
pronouns,
pronouns and things, we have to retrain our brains a bit.
We do. And so I use they, them as my pronouns rather than she or her. And I was born, biologically female at birth. I do happen to be one person that was born with more testosterone in my system than more other biological women.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's a factor or not, that has not been confirmed yet within studies, but it's a possibility. But again, gender is a social construction. So, it's really about how we identify versus what our bodies do and how they perform. When it comes to pronouns, they, them pronouns are considered plural or singular. We're used to hearing them as a plural, but we've always used them in the singular context when we don't know a person's gender. About the person in the car behind you on the road, oh, they are such a, so-and-so if they're riding on your tail. Or you get a phone call, somebody picks up the phone before you get to it, and you ask who they are. And we don't think about that because it's unconscious, but we're really taught about the plural in school, partially with spelling. They are their contraction versus their, T-H-E-I-R.
Right.
So that tends to stick in people's minds more. And also subject verb with, they are versus he is or she is. So people tend to get messed up around that when they have to really think about it.
Right.
So it can be frustrating.
Right, juggling grammar and the right one.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then there are other pronouns available.
What are they?
There's a lot. I have a list.
To confuse everybody.
Right. I have a list of over 30 pronouns that people use. Some are from other languages, like ella in Spanish. But others are newer ones, like Z, which
that's
can be
X-E, isn't it?
It can be spelled X-E or Z-I-E or Z-E.
Oh, okay.
Three different versions of it.
Sounds like they're all on the new Scrabble dictionary, it sounds like.
I know some are. Some are. And the newer ones are, I mean, language is fluid. It's always changing. It's always evolving. So, you know, we expect within another century, if humanity is still around by then, that these will be common in terms of knowledge. How a person identifies, it's best for a person to let other people know how they identify. And one thing that we do at the Gender Health Center, and we recommend when we do our trainings, is when we have, like, when we're in a meeting where people are introducing themselves, they introduce themselves with their name and their pronouns. We also ask people to put their pronouns in their signature line on their emails. And that is a way of normalizing that practice, as well as letting people know that you're a safe and aware person to talk to about those kinds of issues for people who might not be out yet. But yeah, it can be confusing. Personal experience with pronouns was with they, them pronouns, or even switching from he to she, was a friend of mine that I grew up with who transitioned in their 30s from female to male, and it took me over a year to stop saying she, I mean he.
Right.
And they, them was actually something that I defaulted to in that process before I really understood the context of non-binary. I didn't come out as non-binary until my mid-30s.
But then they changed again, so you got to...
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, have conversations with people. If you slip up, apologize and move on. Don't make a big deal out of it. Making a big deal can actually be kind of really annoying over time, especially if a person's not really making the effort. But it really is the effort that counts.
Right, yeah. The acknowledgement.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing that some people suggest, and this is up, there's a little contention around this, but some people suggest that you can default to they, them for all people until you know how they identify. Okay. And that's not the worst thing in the world, but some people who really identify heavily with the binary ends of the spectrum, whether they're transgender or cisgender, might have problems with that. Mm. So... Again,
it's a minefield.
Yeah, you can't always please everybody, but the effort and communication are what matter.
So yeah, we were talking about gender issues and identification, and there's a lot of people who are, you know, they get confused about it. They want need more. How do I learn more? Can you tell us about some of the resources that are available?
So first of all, there's the Trans Lifeline, which is a transgender-specific crisis and support hotline run by transgender people. Most suicide and crisis hotlines are run by volunteers, but when it comes to issues surrounding, you know, sexuality and gender identity, it's really good to have people available who have lived experience in that. So, and the number for the Trans Lifeline is 877-565-8860. And then there's another resource available that I really like. It's a phone app called They2Z. That's the word they, the number 2, Z-E. And that can be found at they2zyth.org, where you can download it or go to the Google Play or Apple Play Store and go ahead and download that. And you can put in your zip code and find your nearest transgender resources available. And there is a ton of other information available on that as well. Here in the North Bay, just doing a quick Google, I found the translifeconference.org/resources. And there are several support groups here in Sonoma County. I would recommend going to the website, translifeconference.org/resources, to get that information. And then lastly, there's also the Trevor Hotline, which is for LGBT full spectrum.
Okay.
People, which is another crisis and support hotline. And, of course, you know, almost every area, including where I live, has a PFLAG, parents and family, or parents and friends of lesbians and gays. And PFLAG, you know, has support groups. Like where I live, PFLAG is the only organization that serves the LGBT community. So our support groups are inclusive of members of the community as well as friends and family. So, you know, in larger areas, they're often separated. Friends and family can work on their issues, and, you know, community members can work on theirs that are specific to their own personal experiences.
Indeed. What an amazing time we're living in. In fact, with so many people who used to live, have to live secret lives and afraid of their lives, just, lives being ruined by being exposed and things. It's wonderful that this is, this is coming out.
It really is. And I mean, I know the North Bay has a huge, LGBT community and a lot of support here. And I'm really grateful to, to this area for being so open and accepting. Not every area is like that where I live, politically we're purple-ish right now. We've been leaning more toward the blue end of the spectrum politically over the last few years, but for the most part, it's a very conservative community and a lot of religiosity and older thinking patterns that just aren't as accepting. And what happens often is LGBT youth will leave home at the earliest convenience and leave the area because they just don't have the support that they need, and there's a lot of social isolation involved. Right. So, resources like PFLAG are extremely important.
How are schools handling that for young kids?
Well, I don't know about here, but I do know most schools in most areas, middle schools and high schools, have GSAs or Gay Straight Alliances or other similar types of groups that are basically like student clubs, student organizations that have an instructor as a sponsor or I don't know what they call them, advisor. Okay. In my area, RPFLAG runs those groups. So members of RPFLAG go into the schools and run those groups. I do gender presentations at schools in my area with PFLAG. So I take in two other members of PFLAG, and it's usually myself, and then we have a very young trans man and an older cisgender lesbian. So the three of us kind of make up the better part of the spectrum there. And it's great because, we're able to share our lived experience at age-appropriate levels, and that's always really important, for parents to know, because, parents can be concerned about what their children are learning when they're not there. So,
are they? Do they have to approve of that? How is that built into the school system?
It depends. Every school district is different and has its own rules. And comes up with its own curriculums in terms of things like sex ed. And sometimes our presentations are part of the sexual education curriculum. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're just for the GSA. Sometimes we have an instructor who specifically asks us to come in because they have one student that is in the coming out process, but they're wanting their peers to be educated before they really become public about it.
Right. So they don't want to just jump in
Right.
When it's been prepared a bit.
Right. And, instructors, teachers are often the front line for, safety issues when it comes to youth. So, and when it comes to, mental health issues that surround the stigma that the LGBT community faces, it's one of the best resources we have. So educating our instructors and then the instructors participating and helping to educate their students and offer them the support and resources that they need.
Right, from the youngest age. Because, there's, you read in the paper about literally children, 6, 7, 8, have decided that they are not the gender they, everyone's telling them.
Right. Well, most of us know at a very young age. I remember as early as like 4 years old saying, I want to be the daddy. Not really having a lot of context around that, but I always wanted to be a boy and a girl.
Right.
And it didn't make sense to me why I couldn't be. I mean, interestingly enough, I grew up fishing and working on cars and having ballet lessons, and I enjoyed it all. I still do. We really don't know what specifically, triggers gender identity. But gender being a social construct, we do know that, children are able to tell us what they want when they feel safe. And when we allow them to be who they are and tell us who they are, then they become the best version of themselves at younger ages. And they don't have all of the struggles, especially the depression and anxiety, and other mental health struggles that surround our community because of the stigma.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible when you think of all the so many hundreds of years that's been going on, and now we're sort of having the conversation.
We're having the conversation now, but, it's actually only Western civilization that really has had issues for the last, and I wouldn't even call it the last several hundred years. The Victorian era was really a defining era in terms of gender issues here in the USA, and sexuality issues in a lot of respects. But in a lot of indigenous cultures, there have always been identities available, you know, third or multiple options for genders.
Okay.
So, you know, in Mexico, there is a group called the Mushis. In India is the Hijra. Some people some Native American tribes identify as two-spirit or have specific terminology to be inclusive of other genders.
So, yeah, it was always there, but our own Western philosophy has damped that down.
Well, and interestingly, in indigenous communities throughout history, people who identified outside of, you know, the gender boxes that we place people in have often been in, you know, like shaman and teaching traditions.
Mm.
So they've been revered in a lot of those communities.
Still a lot to learn, isn't it?
Well, I think we have a lot to learn from, you know, from our traditional and indigenous communities.
Indeed. Comes down to people, and how do we support and how do we ally with people who are going through these type of transitions and help them through this?
Right. So ally is the best word to use. And it's important to know that using the word ally means that you are taking a stance. One of the best ways that people can support us is to learn and use correct and inclusive language, to remember that identity is defined by the individual and that your job is to basically accept them for who they say they are. Standing up to other people, to your friends, your colleagues, your family, to criticism and educate them, educate yourself. And I can't stress this enough. Expecting people from any marginalized group to always have to do the emotional always have to do the emotional labor to educate others is very, very exhausting and very difficult. And there are so many resources. If you go to your favorite web search engine, you can find a lot of resources. A couple of books off the top of my head would be like Transgender 101 or The Transgender Child. Those are both great books. Helping your friends find safe or brave spaces and resources. You know, if a friend comes out to you and they have questions, you know, get online with them. Make some phone calls for them. Be careful not to out other people. So the best way to do that is ask, do you want me to let other people know that you're transgender, or is that not my place? Asking people what their pronouns are and where and when to use them correctly.
Okay.
Same thing with names. You know, a lot of us go through name changes. You know, Del is a nickname that I've had since I was a teenager. And I've gone back to it after not using it for a while because it is more neutral, you know, than my given name. Some people change their name entirely. And, you know, using the correct name is a great way to support people. And, of course, always let people know that you accept them no matter what. And then ask them how you can support them.
Okay. Don't assume anything.
Right, right, right. So, suicide rates among transgender, extremely shocking statistics, 47% of transgender people have attempted suicide in their
life. Oh, my goodness. What's the regular world percentage?
Under 10%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the main reason is stigma. You know, in school, you know, on any schoolyard, you see the social hierarchies, you know, forming, and any child that doesn't fit in will experience some form of bullying. Depending on the beliefs of their family and their communities, you know, if a child does not fit into gender norms and there's no support for that child that's vocalized to the rest of the children, then that bullying tends to continue through school. Right. We have kids who know that they don't fit in anywhere. They don't fit in at home. They don't fit in at church. They don't fit in at school. They have no safe place to go,
right,
you know, to be who they are. You know, and that lack of acceptance is very, you know, very disturbing. And that's the main driver for the mental health issues that most transgender people face. When it comes to other mental health issues, the statistics tend to be, you know, like the ones that tend to be more on the biological end, you know, are very close to the regular population, you know, things like schizophrenia, whereas, you know, anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder, you know, are really big within the transgender community because of the stigma.
Okay.
And the violence and bullying and
Everything. Adds up, doesn't it? Yeah. Top of it.
Yeah. So, you know, it's the that's why it's so important, you know, politically, to think about, you know, how politics affect people's daily lives, because that, in some way, some of the political stances that are being taken can be considered a form of bullying. And people don't always think of it that way. But
we're not taught to look at that at all, are we?
No.
That light.
No.
So. Just our own privilege.
Yeah, you know, even other things like, you know, I grew up with, my favorite was love the sinner, hate soul, and it's like, I accept you, just not parts of you.
Right.
Okay. So, yeah.
That's a tricky one to pass, yeah.
It is. Yeah. So it's so important for us to, you know, support each other, for, you know, people to be allies, and for people to start understanding we're only 2% of the population, you know, and then when you add in intersex people, that's another almost 2%. 4%, that's a lot of people.
That's millions upon millions of people.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for enlightening us.
Absolutely.
Give us some leadership in that.